My name is Jennifer Marsman, and in today's session, we're going to be talking about integrating sensor and location support with Windows 7. So it's a fairly straightforward agenda we're going to tackle today. First of all, I'm going to give you an introduction to the Windows sensor and location platform, and then we're going to dive into both the sensor and the location architecture and then the actual API. So we'll definitely look at some code. I'll take you through a tour of some of the APIs, and then I will show demos for each of these capabilities as well. And then finally, both of these do have both a native and a managed code API, so I will take a look at both of those during this talk. All right, so what's the point? Why do we even want to do this? Why would it make sense to use this sensor and location API? So I think the holy grail, the number one reason, is working outdoors. The overall point is the fact that these applications can adapt to your current environment. So imagine you as a developer, you have this application, you have the ability to take information about the outdoors, whether it be light or movement or location, those kind of things, and then you can have your applications give a better experience based on the information you're receiving from various sensors. And as I said, the holy grail of this, I think, is working outdoors. I don't know if any of you have tried to work outdoors in the past, but it is just not possible. And we're almost there, people. Like, the technology is so close. We have laptops, right, so we can take our computers outdoors. And we have wireless internet, so we're able to access the internet outdoors. But the final thing, the final step we need to take to achieve this goal is that the screen brightness. I don't know if you guys have tried coding outdoors before, and it just never works because you just can't read your screen. So imagine an application. Imagine Visual Studio being able to adjust itself based on the amount of light it reads. So if there was some kind of a light sensor on your machine, it would have the capability to see, oh, it's really bright out here. I will make the screen brightness correspondingly bright so that you can read it, and maybe even do things like increase the font or, you know, make the background more high contrast, maybe black on white or something like that, so you have the ability to read your screen a little bit easier. And that's just one application. There's other applications as well. There's the whole idea of using an accelerometer in the games. The Nintendo Wii really introduced this as a paradigm, and it's a very, very cool thing to be able to interact with a 3D object and tilt it and rotate it in three-dimensional space and have the game or your application react correspondingly. And then finally, very easy to tell, or a very easy scenario to think of, is location. So sensors can also sense location, sensing where you are actually physically located, and there's a whole bunch of possibilities in that space. Everything from, you know, even in things like being a search engine, if I search for, you know, Chinese restaurants and it knows where I'm located, if it knows that I am currently in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and I'm looking for Chinese restaurants, it can give me better results because now it knows it can find Chinese restaurants that are just in my area as opposed to Chinese restaurants in California or somewhere on the other side of the country. So, and then there's a lot of opportunities in advertising as well, like the closest gas stations or other things are very, very compelling scenarios your applications can create. Even like a retail banking type scenario where you can maybe find the closest retail branches to you. All kinds of applications there. So hopefully you can see there's a lot of value in sensors. All right, so how would we do that then? Windows 7 has an entire API for working with sensors. It is based in COM, so you do have to use, there are some interfaces you can implement to get this COM functionality. And then it's also going to work with some drivers. So there's a lower level thing where there's kind of one unified API, and then manufacturers of certain sensor devices can then write their drivers to correspond to implement this particular unified sensor platform. And then you as application developers can also work with this one unified sensor platform. And then suddenly we get this tremendous benefit of, as a developer, if you want to have your application work with multiple different sensors, you don't have to have to write code and understand a million different APIs, one for each different kind of sensor that you're writing. Instead, you just code to this one sensor API, and then all of the devices, too, are coding to this API, and everything just kind of works together in one unified code base. So a very, very compelling story for application developers, especially. Another thing that's important to kind of call out here is the privacy and security concerns. We take privacy and security very, very seriously at Microsoft. And one of the things that we're, I'll talk about in a little bit more detail in a sec, is the fact that, like, your location, for instance, that might not be something you want to broadcast. So we do take that in mind, and we'll speak to that in just a second. All right. So I kind of hinted at the fact that there was this whole architecture, and devices were coding to it as well. So let me just kind of show you what that would look like. So I'm using a sensor device right now, plugged into my machine via USB, that Freescale device right there. That's a device, it's a sensor board that's created by a company called Freescale, and these devices were given away at the PDC in 2008, so some of you may be familiar with them. But I can give you a link if you're interested in looking into them. And they have actually implemented drivers that work with our sensor API. So they've kind of added these whole class extensions. So at the system level, the makers of these devices can create drivers that work against this unified API. And then there's a whole bunch of support baked into the OS. So there's a whole section in the control panel, a new section called Location and Other Sensors. And this will enumerate for you all of the sensors that your machine knows about and whether they are enabled or disabled. And then there's also some location functionality as well, namely a default location, and we're going to talk more about that later. And then finally, kind of the top layer of this API is the sensor API. That's what you as application developers are going to be coding against and writing your applications to work with the sensor API. And then the sensor API knows how to work with the sensor class extensions and the various drivers that we've put together. So it's a really, really compelling unified story of all these sensors kind of working against a standardized approach. All right, I already mentioned briefly privacy concerns and how we take that very seriously. So location is one example of a piece of data that we would consider PII, or personally identifiable information. And what we mean by that is anything that could be used to trace back and figure out who the user is considered PII. And so user consent is always required to share that kind of data. And so one of the ways we've dealt with this is by default, all sensors are going to be disabled when you install them. So you can install the sensor, and then by default, it's going to remain disabled on your machine. And then it does take admin rights to enable it on a box. And so there's two different ways you can actually enable a sensor. One way is to go into the control panel, and in the control panel there's, I mentioned that enumeration of your sensors, and you can click enable sensors on a particular sensor, and then it's enabled. And then as application developers, there's also a method that you can call called request permissions. And request permissions is going to launch a dialog box for the user. And then the user, it will say, do you want to give access, or is it okay to enable this this particular sensor? And sensors are enabled on a per-user basis. It's not done by machine. It's done by user. So you have the capability to do that. And so that dialog box will launch it for the particular end user. They can enable it then right from your application, and then it's set. And we'll talk more about that and see the code to do that in a little bit. All right, so what's in a sensor? There actually is a class called sensor that we'll look at in a bit, but just at a high level, here are some of the things that it contains. First of all, there's a number of different categories of sensors, and a category really tells you what is being sensed. So, for example, one example might be location. That's one thing that could be sensed. Another thing that could be light. There's various other categories of sensors. And then there's something called a sensor type. And types are actually a subset of categories. So for each category, there are a whole bunch of different types. And type really answers the question, how is it being sensed? So for the example category of location, there's a number of different ways that it could be sensed. One example is GPS. Another thing might be cell phone tower or Wi-Fi triangulation. There's that default location thing in the control panel that I mentioned briefly. So there are a whole bunch of different ways to sense location, and that's what type does. It gives you the how that it's being sensed. Next, there's properties on a sensor. Some of these properties are read-only, and some of them are read-write. So the read-only properties would give you various information about the sensor. One example is model, so the model of the sensor, that's a read-only property where you can find out what model that particular sensor is, but it's not something that you would ever change, so it is read-only. And then there's a couple of properties on each sensor that are basically the configuration, how you would configure the sensor, and those are read-write properties. One example of a read-write property is report interval, and that tells how often you want to get new data, how often you want the sensor to sense whatever information it's sensing and send you a report on that. And then next is the actual data report. So the data report, you can do it two different ways, asynchronous or asynchronous. And the synchronous method is basically polling, right? You can, in your code, you can actually synchronously poll the sensor and say, hey, what's your current value? Get that information and then keep using it. And that's one way to do it. The more preferred way is to do it asynchronously, which uses an event-driven mechanism so that the sensor will just tell you. So if your report interval is, you know, every second, 1 second, then asynchronously an event will be fired every second, which gives you the value that the sensor has at that time. Next, we have events. There's a number of different events. State change will tell about the different states, and we'll talk about those in just a second, but as the states change, you get an event on that, so you could take an action if you so desired. And then when new data arrives, of course. When you get a new data report, you can update your UI based on new light values or update a game based on new accelerometer, new values from the accelerometer, that kind of a thing. So that's all very event-driven as well. And then finally, states. There's a number of different states a sensor can be in. One of them is access denied. I briefly mentioned that report permissions and that you had to explicitly enable a sensor. If you haven't enabled a sensor and you try to read data from it, you will get an access denied error. So calling that request permissions does make sense in order to make sure that the user does have permission and has enabled the sensor before you try to read data from it, and we do have the methods to do that. And then finally, enabled is one thing. It can be in an error state, that kind of a thing, but it's there's a bunch of different states, so you can make sure that your sensor is in the state that you expect. All right, so here is the architecture. There are three kind of, there's more than three classes, but I think these are the three core ones that kind of sum up what you need, and these are the COM-based interfaces that you need to do to interact with COM. So the first is this iSensor Manager, and the Sensor Manager basically manages all of the sensors for that you have on the machine. Or that are available to the user. And there's a whole bunch of gets on there, so you can get sensors by an ID, you can get sensors by category, so that would be give me all the light sensors or give me all of the accelerometer sensors, et cetera. And then you can even get them by type as well if you want to specify the different types. You can request permission, so that's where you would launch that dialog box to the user saying enabling them to enable their sensors and various other things. So that's kind of the role of the sensor manager. And then there's an iSensor interface, and that contains all the data specific to one sensor. So all of those read-write all of those properties, both read-write and read-only, are accessible via the sensor interface. So you can find out various information about the sensor there. And then you can also access the data properties through there. There's a get data on there. And then you can set various things. You can set event interest and event sync to do some of these things asynchronously, register for events, that sort of thing. So all of that capability is within the sensor. And then finally, there's an iSensor data report. And that actually I believe it's called iSensor report now. I think the data has been chopped in a subsequent release. But that will give you the actual data that your sensor is reading. So get sensor value, et cetera. And there's always a timestamp associated with the report as well, which is nice if you want to do any kind of trending information, like over time, what is the sensor producing and what is your light look like or that sort of a thing. You have that information. And then the actual value of whatever it is that you're sensing, you can access through the data report. All right, so let's look at some code. I'm going to start with a native code example. So here's how you would get an actual sensor. You'd enumerate them and kind of go through them to grab one. you can see right here, I am, what I'm doing is just kind of, that's the first thing. I'm actually creating an instance of my sensor manager on this line right here. And then I have a collection in a sensor. And the first thing I'm going to do is on the sensor manager that I instantiated up here, I'm going to get sensors by type. And in this case, I'm asking only for the ambient light sensors. So it's going to reach out for all of the sensors that are sensing ambient light, and it's going to fill this collection. Remember, we're passing by reference when we use that ampersand. So it's going to fill this collection of ambient light sensors. So I have a collection of ambient light sensors right here. And then I'm going to use my sensor manager to request permissions. And I'm going to request permissions there for on the current window, and then say, here's the collection of the sensors requiring permission, so I'm going to ask for permission to use all of the ambient light sensors. And then you can set a true-false modal flag. So that means when the dialog pops up to request that information, if it's set to true, then they will have to respond to that dialog before interacting with the rest of the UI. And then if it's succeeded, then we can access our collection, and right now we're just getting the first sensor. We're getting whatever is at position zero, and we're putting that into our this sensor thing, this PALS sensor. All right, filling that value. So now we have our sensor. Perfect. Now that we have a sensor, how do we interact with it? In this case, we're using an ambient light, so we're going to continue that scenario. Here is our on data updated, so let's say that an event has been fired and we have a new data report. So we're going to call this method, this will be our event handler. And in this case, we're doing some initialization of this prop variant right here, initializing out this light level variable. And then I'm going to call this new data, which is the data report that I'm receiving in this method, as an input to this method. In this new data report, I'm going to call get sensor value, and I'm looking for a particular thing, a data type of light level in lux, and then it's going to fill here this light level variable for me. And then I can extract a float value from it right here using this method. And then with light data, typically you want to normalize it. And the reasons for this is just working with light. The brightness tends to increase exponentially. So a lot of times using it just kind of standard as you in lux as it is doesn't work too well because it won't have a nice linear increase and decrease as the light works. So oftentimes you see people will apply a logarithmic function to it or some kind of power kind of thing. And in this case, we're normalizing it, and we're getting it into a level that it'll range from 0 to 1. And so then once we have it normalized, we're going to call an update UI and update UI however you would want to do it based on the amount of light that's available. All right, then we clear out that light level, and we're good. So fairly straightforward, nothing too crazy in here. That is the native code story, and I'm sure some of you are asking, okay, how do I do this in managed code? And the way you would do that is through a separate little download that you need called the Windows 7 API Code Pack. And just to give you a little history here, remember that Windows 7 shipped it shipped before .NET 4.0. So Windows 7 shipped first, and then this Windows 7 API Code Pack was released with Windows 7. And then some months later, .NET 4.0 was released. And so some of the functionality that was in the original Windows 7 API code pack was transitioned into .NET, but a good chunk of it just remains in this code pack and is not part of the .NET framework proper. And so one of the things that is still in the code pack is the sensor, the managed sensor support. So in order to use managed code with the sensors, you do need to download the Windows 7 API code pack. And there's a ton of cool stuff in there. I've enumerated some of the stuff out there on taskbar, libraries, sensor support, DirectX, power management, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a whole bunch of really cool things you can do to access the new functionality in Windows 7 and to code for that and really make your applications light up on Windows 7 and just do some really cool things. So all of those things that I've listed out there are still in the Windows API code pack. However, there are some things that were in there initially that are not in there anymore that have transitioned into .NET 4.0. Some examples of that are the multi-touch functionality. That's now in .NET 4.0. The ribbon support moved over as well, as did the location. When we talk about the location platform next, you don't actually need the Windows 7 API code pack for location. That stuff all did move into .NET 4.0. The code pack is a library. It's not a full product. It's open source, so you can see all the source, and there's form support available. And I already mentioned how some of it's moved into .NET. And then I have a nice little bit.ly link there for you, so if you want to go grab a copy of it, you are welcome to. All right. So as you can see, the managed equivalent of is pretty much just a wrapper over the native code. It's very, very simple stuff. Some of this stuff is actually a little bit out of date. This is from an earlier version of the API code pack. So I believe it's called a sensor report now instead of a sensor data report. But it's basically the same thing. And there is a one-to-one correspondence essentially with the native code equivalent. So we have a sensor manager, a sensor, and a sensor report, essentially, just like we did before in the native code. Sensor is an abstract base class in this paradigm, and so you would actually instantiate one of its derived classes. In our derived classes for ambient light specifically, for an accelerometer 3D, and there's this unknown sensor, and so you can fit a lot of other sensors into the unknown sensor bucket. All right, so let's look at some code. How would we go and do the same things that we just did in native code in this is C#, but you can also do it in VB.NET. There is a class called SensorList, which contains a collection of sensors. In this case, I'm going to have a sensor list of accelerometer 3D type, and I'm going to call that sensor manager and get sensors by type ID, and that ID is accelerometer 3D is the type. So I'm going to basically get all of the accelerometers, all of the 3D accelerometers on my machine is going to get returned into that sensors collection. Then I have this 3D or A3D sensor that I'm just going to hold on to for a second. It's set to null. And then in this scenario, one of the things that was left out that you should really do also is request the permissions to utilize those sensors. That code is not in here, but that should be in here. And then finally, you're going to, if that sensor count, since you reached out to grab all those sensors, if there are more than one, if there are more than zero sensors available, there is at least one, then it will just go ahead and grab the first one in that collection and use that sensor. All right, so pretty straightforward code. Now, how would we get data off of it? In this case, we're going to use the asynchronous method. You can also do it synchronously. And what I'm going to do is wire up an event handler. So we're going to do a new data report changed event handler here, and so it's going to call this onDataChanged method when the event fires. And then here's our onDataChanged method. And in this case, it passes in the sensor, a reference to the actual sensor. I'm sorry, not a reference, but it passes in a pointer to that, not a pointer, passes in the sensor. So you can use that sensor, testing it back to an accelerometer 3D, and then I can just read stuff right off of that sensor. So in this case, I'm reading the current acceleration value on both the X, on the X, Y, and Z, all three of those axes. And then in this case, I have a simple UI in the code, in the corresponding code, and so I'm taking a label X and filling its content, and a label Y and a label Z. So I'm just writing out to a bunch of labels on the UI. All right, and then one last thing I want to talk about briefly before we jump into demos, and that is that ambient light sensor. So I already mentioned that I think that the light sensor is the holy grail of the sensor network because I really, really want to work outside and very good stuff. I didn't mention yet, though, that there is some out-of-the-box functionality here with Windows 7. If you do have any kind of light sensor attached to your machine, just out of the box with Windows 7 without explicitly developing anything for any applications, it will change the screen brightness for you. So I doubt you can see it over live meeting, but I do have a sensor board hooked up to my machine right now. And if I cover up the, I'm not going to do it right now. I'll do it in a second with the demos. But when I cover up the light sensor, my screen brightness will darken. And when I like shine a flashlight on it or hold it up to direct light, it will increase the brightness on the screen. So you do get that out of the box with Windows 7. I wanted to make sure to call that out. It's kind of cool that it does adapt so nicely. All right, so let's do some demos. And for these demos, I do want to call out again that I'm using this Freescale. I do not have anything built into this current machine that I'm working on right now. There's the PDCs, I'm sorry, the laptops that were given away at PDC 2009. Those laptops did include a light sensor. Those were created by Acer, and they have a light sensor included right on them. And this particular sensor that I'm using is a sensor board from Freescale. It does contain an ambient light sensor as well as an accelerometer on it. So I can get all of that information right out of there. So let me go ahead and I will share my desktop. All right. And I'm going to start by showing you some code that comes as a sample with the Windows API code pack. So when you download the Windows API code pack, they give you some source code and they also give some samples. And one of the samples is called sensor samples. And so if you go in here, there's actually a couple projects in here, five projects in here, but you can switch between two of these guys as the startup project, an accelerometer, as well as an ambient light one. So let me show you the two of these and we can kind of walk through the corresponding code as well. So I'm going to run this guy by hitting F5. And it brings up, you can see this little dialog box right here. And I have my sensor board sitting on the table. I'm going to pick it up and kind of move it around. I'm going to tilt it sideways on one side. I'll tilt it. I'll kind of bring it back to center. Sideways the other way. Move it like up and down. And then just kind of wiggle it, kind of do big loopy circles with it. And see kind of all the sensors kind of go between -1 and 1. So you can see all of the movement that I'm able to capture as I move this sensor board around. Whee! Okay. So that's there's basic accelerometer. I apologize, I don't have a webcam or anything to show you what I'm doing as I interact with that. But you can see it is capturing the X, Y, and Z values on my accelerometer. So let me show you the code to do that. This is the accelerometer code right here, and I'll go into full screen mode, which is Shift-Alt-Enter, in case you're curious, and that way you can read it a little bit better. And so what I'm doing right here in my constructor is first I'm wiring up the sensors changed event, so as sensors are added, I get that information, or as various properties change on them. I have this new sensor changed event, so sensors changed is going to have an event handler wired up. And then we're also doing this hookup accelerometer right here. So let's see what both of those methods are. Here's the sensor change guide, and what's going to happen whenever the sensors change is that we're going to call again this hookup accelerometer to make sure that we capture it. We notice that there is this begin invoke and new method invoke or delegate stuff, and the only reason we need that is because we're doing this asynchronously, so that means it's going to be on a non-UI thread, and communication between non-UI and UI threads does require a little bit of fancy work. So that's all this is. But the core of what you need is right here. Here is hookup accelerometer. So this is what's going to happen to kind of make sure that accelerometer is able to be read. Again, I'm doing the sensor list, and I'm getting sensors by type ID, so I'm grabbing all of the sensors that are of type accelerometer 3D. And then it's going to get that collection right here. If there is at least one in there, the number is greater than 0, then I'm going to grab that first one at position 0. I'm going to set that accelerometer to auto-update, so auto-update data report equals true. And then I'm also going to wire up an event handler here. So every time there's a new data report, the data report's changed, I'm going to call this method, data report changed, right there. And then finally, there's one last little piece of text here. It just displays accelerometers available at the bottom, and it just gives you the number. And for me, it's just one. I just have that one that was available. So here's our data reports changed. In this particular thing, again, we're doing our begin invoke, just the UI stuff that we have to handle. A sensor, we have a reference to the sensor here. We're casting it to an accelerometer 3D since we know that's the type that it is. And then we're just grabbing all that information right here. So we can just grab directly from the sensor, get the current acceleration, and then we have to specify what axis we want it on. And so I'm going to grab the X, Y, and Z axes and set those values right here, which are my labels, or the values on the little graphic that you guys were seeing before. And then finally here, when the form is displayed on that form shown event, it's going to get all the sensors that I know about here, and it is going to request permission to them. So this would invoke the UI for me if I did not already, however, I have already enabled the sensor on my machine. And because it's already enabled, it's not going to bother me again because it knows that I'm okay with this it using the data for the sensor. So that's why I did not actually see a dialog box here, because it's smart enough to know when you're already okay with using the sensor, which is nice, I think. All right, so that is, I'm going to go off of full screen right here. All right, and then let me move over to the ambient light one. I'm going to right-click on the ambient light one and set that as my startup project. And then I will run this for you again. I have 5 to run. And you can see now here's another little dialog box of ambient light level. And the ambient light level, here, let me do my nice little Windows 7 trick. Shake it, and then everything but that will disappear. Good fun. Okay, so here's the sensor ID. You can see, and I have my, I'm going to grab my sensor board again. Right now, I have about, like, medium level light in my room, in the office that I'm in. I'm going to cover up the light sensor with my hand. And so it's covered up now. Now you can see that the amount of light has moved to very, very small. And you probably can't see this over live meeting, but my screen has also gotten very, very dim as well. The screen brightness went down significantly because in a low light environment, you don't want a super bright screen. It'll blind your eyes. Then I can kind of slowly take my hand off the light level, and it's slowly growing. I'm bringing it out slowly from under the table where I was hiding it. And now let me stick it in the direct light from the window behind me. And I also have a flashlight here. I can shine the flashlight directly on it as well. And you can see now we basically reached the max level of light here. So I have a very, very high thing. And correspondingly, the Windows 7 out-of-the-box functionality in my screen has gotten very bright too as well. But I doubt you can see that over a live meeting. All right. So I'm going to turn off that flashlight. Just stick my sensor board right over there now. And that's the ambient light sensor. So I'm going to turn that off and bring you back to the code. And so let's look at what the light looks like. Now, this is very, very similar, so I won't take a ton of time with this. It's very similar to the accelerometer, but let's take a look. In this case, remember there was a progress bar that showed the amount of light. And so, and there's also this max intensity. So remember those for just a second. All right, so we're doing the same thing at the beginning. We're wiring up the sensors changed event so that we have a handler here when the sensors change. Then it also is calling in the constructor populate panel, which is right here. And if we look at populate panel, you can see what we're doing here is grabbing a list, getting all of the sensors of type ambient light sensor, so any light sensors will be grabbed. You can have multiple on your machine. So what it's going to do then, it clears everything off, and by default, since the ambient light sensor is 0. And then what we're going to do is iterate through all of the sensors in the machine. I do have one of the PDC laptops from the PDC 2009 that Acer created. So if I would have plugged this sensor board into that machine, I would have actually had 2 sensors, and it would show 2 progress bars like that. But I'm using one of my other machines, and this particular machine does not have any built-in light sensors, so I only have the 1 light sensor that's attached from my Freescale board via USB. So I'm only going to go through this once in my particular scenario, but it would cycle through and create multiple progress bars if there were multiple sensors. So what it does is for each sensor, it's going to create a new progress bar to monitor it, set that all up. We're going to create a label as well, and just that shows which sensor it corresponds to. There's your sensor ID information. Add all that to the panel, map it to the progress bar, set some initial values here, and then we're going to grab this is just kind of the initial value of what the sensor is currently reading, that intensity. And then note also that there was that max intensity that was defined as a constant at the beginning, and we are going to grab the minimum value here. So if in case we exceed that max intensity, it'll just grab the max intensity as opposed to exceeding that number by using the minimum function here. And then we're going to set up automatic data report handling. So as new data reports come in, it'll automatically update. So auto update data report is set to true, and then we're going to wire up an event handler on the data report changed event. That's going to call this data report changed handler. And then it's going to increment the number of ambient light sensors. Remember that this is all part of a for loop right here. So as we go through each one, we'll increment the number of sensors. And then finally, when we fall out of that for loop, we've iterated through all of our sensors, we're going to see if the number of ambient light sensors is still zero, that means we haven't found any, then we're going to create a new label and just say no sensors found. So that way we do display something in the UI so the user knows why nothing is happening. Then finally here on this sensor's changed, when anything changes with the sensor, it's going to reinvoke that populate panel, which means that say if a new sensor is added or something, it'll automatically redraw that UI and add a new progress bar for it. And then finally, here's our data report changed. Here's when we actually get new data that we're reading in from the sensor, here's what we're going to execute. First of all, we're going to grab that sensor right here, cast it to an ambient light sensor, and then here in our code, we are going to take grab the progress bar that corresponds to that sensor using this map, the sensor map, to get that, and then report the data. So we grab the intensity metric here again, and then make sure that we make that equal, that it doesn't exceed that max intensity by using the minimum function here again. All right, and we're updating the progress bar accordingly. And then finally, in the form one show, in the shown thing, once the form has been shown, we're doing the exact same thing that we were doing in the accelerometer 3D situation, which is getting all sensors and requesting permissions. So that's just the same as it was before. Okay, so you've seen now just kind of some of the code, and this was kind of hello worldy because it's very simple and allows you to see kind of what that code looks like. Let me show you an example of something that is kind of a more of a cool application of it. I'm going to go right here to something called the MSDN Reader. The MSDN Reader, what they did is they took this code, which is publicly available, something called that MSDN Reader, and they took it and made it light aware, and this is a reader that basically reads MSDN magazine and provides it in kind of a nice reader format. And so they took a copy of that and made it light aware. I don't, the version of MSDN Reader that is currently available for download, though, is not the light aware version, as far as I know. Last time I checked, they hadn't pushed the light aware changes out, so I'm not sure if they're planning to do that or not. Okay, so let me show you how this works. I have kind of a normal lighting situation right now. Here's what it looks like. I'm going to, again, cover up my light sensor. And notice that the script gets a whole lot smaller. In low light conditions, you don't really need huge text. So now it makes it just kind of a little bit easier to read. It's smaller. I'm seeing my screen dim on the Windows 7 default things. Now I'm going to take my hand off the light sensor. Notice that now I'm adding more and more light, so the script, the text is getting bigger and bigger. I'm going to stick it in direct light now, and the display actually goes black and white, essentially. It gets really, really, just for maximum contrast and really, really big fonts, just to make it easiest for you to read it in a really, really bright thing. So if I was outside, this would be a more optimal way to read and process this to make it easy to view. All right, so that's kind of cool. Now we just got to get Visual Studio team to do that, right? And we're all set. We're all going to be coding outdoors if I have my way. All right, so I'll close that example. I like that because it's more of a real-world type example. So let me jump back to my slides, and let's talk about location next. All right. So the location platform. So I mentioned, I think I mentioned this briefly already, but the location API is built right on top of the sensor API. And the reason for that is that location is actually a sensor. It's a sensor that answers the question, where am I? So, again, we're still using the same COM-based functionality. Basically, what the location API gives you is strongly named types. So you get strong typing for this location-specific information as opposed to having to kind of wiggle it into the sensor API. So it's a little more explicit. So very, very cool stuff here. And then you can use a whole bunch of different types of sensors that can provide location information. Again, there's a ton of ways to do this: GPS, Wi-Fi hotspot triangulation, cell phone tower triangulation, all kinds of stuff. So looking at kind of the architecture, the big picture here, the bottom, again, is very, very similar. We have all these different devices, all these different ways to read information, and in this case, read location. So anybody can create drivers for their various things that allow them to interact with this API. We still have that support, this location and other sensors support in the control tunnel, and I'm going to talk more about the default location that I hinted at before in just a sec. And then we have the sensor API. Remember that your applications can call the sensor API directly, like we were talking about before. Or if you're interested in location information, your applications can call the location API, which then in turn will use the sensor API under the covers. And then one thing that's kind of cool, if you want to work with gadgets or scripts, I'm going to show you a gadget demo later. If you want to do that, there's this location iDispatch interface that you can use as well. So I will do a kind of cool demo on that at the end. All right, so benefits of the location platform. Again, we have this great unified API to figure out where you are. And it is independent of provider. Again, we have synchronous and asynchronous models, so you can use the event-driven model or like pull a device to find out where you are. One thing that is extremely cool, in my opinion, is that there's automatic transition between providers. This is awesome. So what I find particularly compelling about this is, let's say that I'm using some kind of, let's say Wi-Fi triangulation. I'm using Wi-Fi triangulation to figure out where I am. That's what my machine is using to do that. But then let's say I just go out of range. There's no Wi-Fi available, so I don't have that. It will automatically fall back to other methods. So I mentioned that default location. It could fall back to that one instead and say, okay, so based on your default location, I think you're here. And it can continue being location aware based on other methods. So it'll switch back and forth based on what's available, and that's totally transparent to you. It'll just take care of that for you, which is nice. And it, of course, gives priority to more accurate things. And then I mentioned that default location, so I'm going to show you that next, but basically in the control panel, you have a method for setting what your default location is, and so that way if there's no other sources available, you don't have a GPS or an IP resolver or any of these other things available, then you will just have, it'll have the ability to just to know what your default location is. So, for instance, if I live and work in the same city, then I could just set that city as my default location, and most of the time I'm there. So it'll be accurate a majority of the time kind of deal. All right, and this is what it looks like, the default location in the control panel. I'll show you this when we get to the demos because actually some of this is kind of cut off in this slide. But what it looks like, it's in the control panel. It's called default location. You can search for it right from the search bar. And you have to have a zip code and a country code. Those two things are kind of mandatory. And then if you want, this is more optional, you can have a civic address. So in this case, the Microsoft office is located at 1 Microsoft Way, Redmond, Washington, 98052. And then down here, this is what I don't like, is that the scroll bar isn't scrolled down. But below that, there's latitude and longitude information as well. So you have that capability too. So, but we'll see that all more in more detail when we get to the demos. So I just hinted at the fact that there are two different types of location data. And depending on the kind of application that you're building, you may want to use one versus the other. So the first is latitude-longitude. And there is a corresponding data report for this called iLatitude or iLatLong report. And so this is going to give you latitude, longitude, and actually altitude as well information, and then along with the associated error margins for each of those. This is the most common format. Most people are pretty comfortable with this, and it's also the most precise format to use. And we'll see later that you can actually derive the civic address from a latitude longitude if you so choose. And then the second option is civic address, and in this case you need that zip code and country, like I said before. It is the most human readable, and in some scenarios and some applications, this might make more sense. Any kind of street directions or mapping programs, most people don't know their latitude longitude coordinates, but they do know, you know, a street that can give you that information. So definitely, depending on your application, this option might make more sense for you. Okay, here's the actual API, the architecture. You can see it looks very, very similar to the sensor stuff. There's something called iLocation, and this guy right here is kind of like the iSensor Manager and the iSensor rolled into one, for the reason that it's only sensing one thing, which is location, so you can kind of combine that functionality. So it will do things like get the location reports and that kind of a thing, which a sensor basically does, and then it also has some of the Sensor Manager functionality in it, such as requesting permissions and stuff. That all lives in here. In addition, much like the sensor reports, there's also location reports here. And so we have a base interface, the iLocation report, and then there's two strongly typed derivations of that base, and those are the iCivic address report and the iLatLong report. And these have specific things. You can see get address line 1, get address line 2, get city, get country, get state, province, get postal code. So you can grab all those things from a civic address. For latitude, longitude, you can get the altitude, the latitude, the longitude, all of the error things, that kind of deal. All of these have timestamp information and sensor ID information and all the stuff that you see up here as well. All right, now we're going to take a quick trip through the API. We only have about 12 minutes left, so I'll try to do this fairly quickly because I really want to do the demos at the end. That's pretty interesting. So just a kind of a quick look at here, obviously getting the report will retrieve the report information and their status. The request permissions I've spoken about several times, that opens up the dialog if you don't already have permissions, exposing it to the user so they can enable it on that per user basis. There's registering and unregistering for a report, and so that will set up kind of asynchronous events to get those notifications that new reports are available. There's the get and set report interval. The interval, of course, is the time between events that you can set, and that is a read-write property. And then we also have accuracy here, so get and set the desired accuracy. Let me talk a little bit more about that because we haven't mentioned that in the past. This is specific to location. There's two values for the desired accuracy. One is default, and then the other one is high. So default is, of course, the default setting, and that'll kind of try to optimize power and cost and some of the other things to give you the best thing that's available, but it won't go, waste a lot of bandwidth or power trying to get that. However, if you need very, very high accuracy data in terms of location and you want it to be pinpointed within a very precise thing, you can request high accuracy. And so that will actually give you a better, probably even better stuff. It will consume more battery power and connection bandwidth, that sort of thing. But you do have choice there is the important thing. There's also some location events. On location changed obviously means I have a new location report available, my location changed, and then you can handle it and update your application accordingly based on your new position. And then on status changed, and that changes when a report status changed. What are the report status changes, you may ask? Great question. Here's the next slide of the report statuses. The first one, report not supported. The most common scenario when you get this one is when you don't have the appropriate sensor. So if you ask for an ambient light report, you're trying to get that, and you don't have an ambient light sensor, you're going to get the report not supported value. There's also a generic report error thing that's just there's some kind of error when creating a report, and that's stuff I get. There's also an access denied. So this is going to happen if the user does not have, the user hasn't enabled the sensor yet or does not have access or has chosen to disable the sensor. So you don't have permission there. So the way to get around this is to call that that request permissions, that iLocation request permissions. And after you request that permissions, and if the user does agree to let you use that data, then they'll be able to access the reports, or your application will be able to access the reports once it's given permission. Then there's also an initializing and a running state. So when it's first getting started and then when it's actually running, that's the enumeration there. Then we have the location report stuff here. So this is information specific to the report. So I have a report here. This contains the actual data in one instance of the sensor. So every time the sensor is based on that report interval, it will generate a report on that report interval every X amount of time, and it'll with the report, there's a sensor ID associated with it, what sensor is it reporting from. There's always a timestamp with the report, so you can, if you have multiple reports coming in, you can see what's the latest or trend or whatever. And then get value will give you the actual data from the report of, for this particular key, what's the value. All right, and then the last thing is that default location. So I mentioned that default location that was part of the control panel, and this default location can be get it and set it programmatically. So you can modify it just from the control panel, like I kind of showed you a thing of before. I'll actually do it in the demo here in a second. But if you don't, if you want to do it programmatically, you can do that too. You can actually set it from an application set what your default value is. We're actually going to see an application called the EDLP, which stands for Enhanced Default Location Provider, that does just that. It sets the default location on the machine, and that's kind of a cool thing that you can download. We'll show that in a second. All right, so let's look at some code here. How do I get a location report? In this case, I have this ID for a civic address report. I have some variables. I'm creating an instance of my location guy, and then on that location variable, I'm requesting permissions right there, and then once I have permissions to use that sensor, I'm going to get a report on it. That's going to fill this report variable, this p-report variable right here. Then I'm going to query that report to get the appropriate information, and then once I have the report, I'm going to get the country from it. So what is the actual country? And I'm going to print that out. Here's the country or region right here, and then free that string. Okay? There's the native code example of it, and some of you may be saying, can we please do this in managed code instead? Yes, you may. So I mentioned before that for the sensor stuff, you need the Windows API code pack. The location API was originally in the API code pack when Windows 7 first launched. Now that we have .NET 4.0, the managed support for location has been moved into the .NET framework proper. So you will actually find this stuff right in .NET 4.0. The namespace that you want to check out is system.device.location. And you can see with the sensor stuff, there is pretty much a one-to-one correlation between the native code classes and the managed code classes, right? It was pretty much just straight wrappers. That's not true with location, and I think the reason for that is that they made the Windows 7 API similar to they wanted it to be more in line with the Windows Phone 7, so that the two of those guys were consistent, had a consistent programming model. So now those two look very much the same. So the location API does look a little bit different now, but it's still pretty much the same stuff. If you do go ahead and look through this, the first class that you're going to want to look at is something called Geo-Coordinate Watcher. That's the thing that's going to grab that location data for you, and it's going to be based on latitude and longitude. This uses primarily latitude and longitude as kind of the base units. However, you do have the capability to convert it into that street address format, and you can use a class called Civic Address Resolver in order to do that. All right. So here's some quick examples. How do we get those guys? How do we do this synchronously? We can instantiate a new geo-coordinate watcher here. In this case, this true-false tells us whether to prompt the user, whether it's okay to use that. In this case, we're saying no, don't suppress the prompt. Go ahead and display that to the user. And then we're going to wait a second before starting just to make sure everything initializes okay. And then we're going to grab a geo-coordinate here, and we're going to grab that right from the watcher, dot position, dot location. That'll give us the current location. There's an is unknown. So if that's not true, it is in fact known, then we can grab the latitude and longitude right off of that geo-coordinate. Otherwise, we'll just write out that it's an unknown value at this point. That's the synchronous way where you're actually polling the geo-coordinate watcher. You can also do this asynchronously using by kind of wiring up the event, an event handler. So again, we're going to instantiate the geo-coordinate watcher. We have a position changed thing right here, the position changed event. We're wiring up a new event handler based on watcher underscore position changed. And then we're going to do the same thing that we were doing before. If it hasn't started, write out a little error message. And then when the event handler fires, we're going to do a console.write line, print out the latitude and the longitude right here. And we can grab that information right here from the geo position changed event args E, and those are strongly typed, so we can grab the position, location, latitude, and position, location, longitude off of those guys and interact with them directly. All right, so let's see just one more demo, and then we will wrap up. So we kind of did a hello world here for the sensors. Let me kind of show you a hello world for the location. This is some code that I wrote. And let me run it first, and then we can walk through the code. Before I run this, I should show you the EDLP that I was mentioning before. So this is, there is a link to this on my blog. I'm going to show you at the very end a list of resources, and I have a blog post that is just full of resources for Windows 7 development. One of the things on there, there's kind of a subsection there that says sensor and location stuff, and so I have a link to the sensor board that I'm using, a link to a blog post that explains how to use the sensor board while and get it working. And then there's also a link to this guy, the Enhanced Default Location Guide, the EDLP it's called. So you can grab this yourself. This is available for download. And this is the thing that programmatically sets the default location. So let me show you. Here's default location, and here's this EDLP application. And as I move around here, let me go on the West Coast, and I'm going to just right-click. And as I right-click, there's that latitude, longitude, and note that it automatically updates the geographic location right there. And I can choose somewhere else. Let me zoom in a little bit, show you this again. Find somewhere where it's more populated. So I'll run into a street address. There we go. There, I found an address. So in this case, you can see every time I click, the latitude, longitude does get updated by default. In this particular application, this EDLP app, it does get updated automatically in the default location panel and control panel. However, it does not update this location right here. It still thinks I'm in Kansas. So in order to do that, you just hit the save address, and then it updates the location or the civic address information as well, but it will always do the latitude longitude for you. And then here in default location in the control panel, we have the postal code available. So these are the mandatory things that you would want to fill in. If you did it, you could just do the zip code and country, and then this address stuff could be optional if you want to. And then here's your geo coordinates. And then you have a record of all the stuff in the event viewer as well. It'll save some information about your stuff there. That's the default location. Here's also the location and other sensors that I was mentioning. This is the enumeration of the sensors that you know about and then whether they're enabled for you as a user right now. Okay, so that's the default location, and this app the EDLP is the thing that allows you to right-click and set a new location. All right, so that's what that does. Let me zoom back out again. Now I kind of have a view of the world more so. Zoom in a little more. Sorry, got too aggressive there. And now let me kind of minimize this and show here's my application, this Hello Location application. And this guy, I'm going to put my push pin kind of here in the middle of the U.S. somewhere. And you can see it tells me, it kind of updates my latitude and longitude based on that. And then this app, I wrote a little app that pretty much, you can definitely break it. You can find cases that it's wrong, but it in general can give you the right continent that you're on. So in this case, I right-clicked and it knows you are in North America. I can try this. Right-click, I'm in South America. Cool. Let's try Africa. Cool. We'll do Europe. great. There's Asia, good deal. Australia, if I click there and it updates appropriately. If I scroll down, I can do Antarctica right there. And then here's this test case. Anybody caught this? If I go right here, this actually is Asia, and yes, it got that right too. I made sure to account for that guy. All right, so that's the little app that I wrote. I can show you the code for this thing. It's just kind of a Hello World example, but I wrote this when I was kind of playing around with the new stuff and how it changed in .NET 4.0. So let's move to full screen mode. The namespace that you need, again, is that system, that device, that location. And what I'm doing here is when you click that refresh button, there's actually two different ways of doing it, the asynchronous or the synchronous, so I can change them here. In this case, I'm using the asynchronous, so that would automatically update, but I also wrote a synchronous method too, and both of them work. I tested both of them. The synchronous method is much like we saw before. We instantiate a new one. I'm using the default accuracy rather than high accuracy. A lot of this looks exactly like the code that we just saw in the PowerPoint, so I can kind of skip through that quickly. Here's the asynchronous. Again, instantiate a new guy, wire up an event handler, and then do an error message if it's not working properly. And then when on that position changed, when that fires, we're going to get this every time the position changes. And in this case, what we're going to do is use this the event args to grab the latitude and longitude and update the labels on the UI accordingly. So this updates the UI, latitude, longitude, and then I have to explicitly call that calculate continent to keep the UI in sync. Otherwise, it'll update those two, but it won't update the current continent. So I'm going to call that. And then here's my incredibly brilliant logic, my very rough estimates of what continent is which. The first thing I do is grab those labels from the UI and get the latitude and longitude values and convert them once into doubles, and then I just use that throughout the thing instead of converting to doubles a million times, which doesn't make sense. Now that they're doubles, I can do math with them. And then there's also a string continent unknown is the default value. And then basically what I'm doing, I should probably bring up the map to show this a little bit better. Move right back like this. And then let me jump over to that enhanced DLP. So the way I did this basically was, first of all, I grabbed the latitude line, latitude line that's like basically right here, and said, okay, anything south of this latitude line right here is Antarctica. So that's the first thing. If the latitude is less than that, you're in Antarctica. Then I grabbed longitude from between two values right here, and basically those two values corresponded to essentially right here, just west of Alaska, and about right here, the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So basically anything North and South America. So I grabbed that as my next logic point, and then I grabbed a latitude value that basically chopped the two continents in half and said, if you're above that, you're North America. If you're below that, you're South America. All right, then I did the same thing with kind of Europe and Africa. If you look back at the map here, I did a line right here, essentially, and there's kind of one longitude line that I use roughly, which cut off, which separates Europe from Asia, and it corresponds pretty well to Africa as well, although a little bit of Africa, this very eastern tip of Africa does get cut off and treated as Asia, but all of this is then, I also then did a latitude line, boom, and anything north of that is Europe, anything south of that is Africa. And so that's right here, those latitude and longitude, and then north of that is Europe, south of that is Africa. And then I essentially drew a box around Australia. If latitude is between these values and longitude is between these values, and that on the map looks like this, basically just a latitude between these values, longitude between these values, then you're in Australia. By drawing a nice little box around it. And then essentially everything else is Asia. I did say if longitude is greater than this value, that's the same value that I used to separate Europe over there so that nobody gets left out. But I did, if you look back here, so anything bigger than that, so anything right here that hasn't already been called Australia, since that's earlier in the if statement, that'll get excluded. So all of this is Asia. And then I also said if you're greater than that, and then see there's an or you're less than this value. And that's to account for this little stretch right here that I am pushpinned in right now, this stuff right on this section right here on the other side of Alaska, which is technically Asia. So that longitude thing, we'll call that Asia as well. And then we just update that label and say that's the continent you're in. All right, so kind of a cool Hello World-ish type application. Then finally, the last thing I wanted to show you that's, again, very Hello World, here's a real example of how this might let me move back to the U.S. And here in the U.S., I'm back. Let me move into somewhere like, for instance, I'll move back to Ann Arbor, see if I can find Ann Arbor on this map. Should be roughly right here. Weberville, close. Still a little too east. There, maybe. The reason I'm going for Ann Arbor is I know I'll find a lot of coffee shops. There we go. Jumped up to 17. Nice. Okay. So I'm in Ann Arbor. Cool. So this is a little, here's a real-life application of this. This is a gadget. So it's a cool thing. It sits on the Windows, on your desktop in the sidebar. And there's a bunch of options here. If you click on the little options tab, you can see this. And this is called the Places gadget. And you can select the places that you're interested in. So in this case, it's looking for coffee shops, but you can also look for gas stations is really, really useful, especially if you're like me and you travel a lot and you don't know where all the gas stations are in an unfamiliar city, and you have to refill your rental car or else you get charged $1 million. That's really, really cool. And then there's other things, movie theaters, grocery stores, banks, ATMs, that kind of stuff, airports is can be useful. So you select the places that you're interested in finding, and then you select a search radius as well. So in this case, it's 5 kilometers. There's a bunch of different options here, though, too. And then I can say okay on those options, and then it will look for, and it will tell you how many places are located within that boundary. So in this case, we're here in Ann Arbor, and it's telling us, okay, there's 17 coffee shops within a 5-kilometer radius of wherever that my default location is. So you can also click here to this larger size, and what that does is this gadget, I'm going to lower this so it doesn't confuse you, this gadget in itself will give you little pointers to every single one of those coffee shops, of those 17 coffee shops. So you can see Common Cup Coffee right here, Coffee House Creamery, a Starbucks, a Bigby, a Caribou, a couple of independent ones, another Starbucks. Really, really cool stuff here. So all of those things will appear right here on the Ann Arbor map. So really neat way that I can actually go and find them, too. So I'm going to lower that again. So I just wanted to call it the Places gadget, as I think that's a really cool real-world example. All right. I am going to wrap up now. Let me jump back to my slide deck briefly. The one thing I want you to kind of walk away from is if you're interested in this and you would like more information, I do have a great set of resources. I've tried to keep all of these. I wrote kind of a detailed blog post that has a whole bunch of information on Windows 7 development. There's a whole subsection on sensor and location support that contains a bunch of stuff. So if you are interested and if you want the download links for any of this stuff, the Windows API code pack link is on there. All of these links are actually here. So if you remember one link, remember this, this bit.ly link. It's genwindev, bit.ly/genwindev. And then I also called up the link here for the Windows API code pack if you want to do managed code development for sensors. Feel free to check that out. And then there's the Sensor and Location Development Center. So there's a whole developer center on MSDN specifically around sensors and locations, and there's forums and all kinds of great stuff there as well. So feel free to check that out too if you'd like. And with that, thank you very much for attending.